everybody, hello, and welcome to We Synced It. Yes, this is a weekly podcast that focuses on all the movies, TV, and the entertainment in between. I am one of your hosts, Pat.
And this is Kev.
And how is everybody doing today? Yes, thank you, thank you. You are far too kind. How you doing today, Kevin, on this St. Patty's Day Sunday?
Feeling good, feeling a little bit buzzed. We already started with the celebrations. We're drinking real Irish, right here, authentic Irish Jameson whiskey. We got a lot going on today. Yes. But first, let's go ahead and start the podcast off.
Mm-hmm. On this day that everybody's pledging as a Grove Street gangster today. Yes.
Cheers. Cheers. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, St. Patty's Day. Grove Street. Oh, smooth. There we go. So, yeah, man.
We're also sipping on whiskey and Coke.
Hell yeah.
Throughout the episode. So, if we get a little loosey-goosey, blame it on St. Patty.
Mm-hmm. Damn, that's good. This is good.
So this is going to be our, have we ever done like a St. Patrick's Day episode?
Nah. I think, I know one day we took off St. Patty's Day to go drink, but I don't think we've ever like celebrated actually on the podcast, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, to our loyal fans, you know, just look in the archive and just look to see if we did celebrate it or not. Maybe we did, but if we already did it, we're going to do it again. So appreciate it.
So we're going to focus on today's episode on the most Irish, the traditional Irish folkloric telling of of the story of Leprechaun.
Yes.
You can't get more Irish than that, right? No, I'm full of shit.
It's about treasures. About selfish treasures that you don't want nobody else to have, and the people who are trying to take it from you. Sometimes you look at the Leprechaun movies and you say to yourself, I sympathize with the Leprechaun. And then other times you say, I sympathize with the actual victims that he kills people in a more, fun barbaric way. He does. Out of everybody, out of all slashers or killers of mythos, I would have to say that the Leprechaun, he kills people in the funniest ways. And I'm not saying because he stabs people in the back and you see his legs just dangling while he's stabbing people in the back, because that's done a thousand times. It's the stuff that he says. He's up there with Chucky, the funny lines that he has. Chucky and Freddy Krueger. And then we have the Leprechaun, which I don't know his real name. What's his name? What's his real name? Rumpelstiltskin? What's his?
Lubden is his real name.
Lubden.
You know what? That may be something that we got to do for the next Horror Fest is put up Leprechaun against Chucky, like short killers.
Who would you be most terrified of?
Chucky.
You wouldn't be scared of the Leprechaun?
Ah, yeah. Leprechaun does have
magic. He's got magic, man.
Yeah, he's got magic.
But the only thing is that if you don't fuck with his goal, he won't fuck with you.
100%. See, that's the thing. Chucky is an actual serial killer. Yeah. He's a strangler. Yeah. So, I don't know. You just got to give him his gold. If you give the Leprechaun his gold,
even if you give it back to him, he's still going to fuck you up for taking it. That's the only thing. Like, if your mitts touch it.
But if you offer him weed.
He's a friend indeed.
Or if you just throw shoes at him, he has, like, this compulsive disorder where he has to shine them.
I forgot about that.
I got to say, Leprechaun. So a lot of film franchises, horror film franchises especially, the first movie is like the best one, and then it gets goofy along the way. I feel like Leprechaun is literally the opposite, where the sequels got better than the original. The original one was okay, and then when he went to Vegas, he went to space, he went to the hood, like it just got better. The jokes were funnier, the puns were better, the kills were a lot more creative.
Yeah.
I think the sequels are actually like more fun to watch more than the original.
Oh, yeah. Leprechaun in the Hood is a fucking classic. I never watched The Leprechaun in Space. I regret that I didn't watch it, but I was always a fan of, like, you know, the TV shows, those episodes when, you know, like, Family Matters and they're going to Disney World or something like that. Yeah. So I always saw, I always was a fan of those kind of things. So to see, like, you know, there was one that was like, what was it? Jason goes to space, yeah, or Jason takes New York or something. No, it was Manhattan.
Yeah.
And not knowing that the Leprechaun was, you know, he was in space too, probably around the same time that Jason was in space. It's like, holy shit, man. Why did I miss
that? What is this infatuation with throwing scary people into space? Is it like Alien? Like, oh, no one can hear you scream, so it's like you're just...
I think that's what they're trying to go off of. No one can hear you scream, or I guess no one can hear you shine your shoes, maybe? I don't know. I don't know what the hell's... I really want to know how the hell he got up there.
So let's dive deep into... Let's start with the first one. The first film came out in 1993. This was written and directed by Mark Jones. Fun fact, this was actually Jennifer Aniston's first, like, breakthrough role. Like, this was her first time doing a feature film.
Yeah.
The character is played by Warwick Davis. For those who don't know, Warwick Davis was in Willow.
A lot of movies.
He was one of the most popular Ewoks in the Star Wars franchise. Yeah. He's been in the industry for a minute.
Yeah, he was also... He was also in the beginning of Star Wars, the first three movies. He was one of the aliens that went up to young Anakin when he won the pod race. He's in costume, so you know you couldn't tell, but yeah, he's pretty good. He is you know, he's one of those fucking British actors, so you know, he probably went to like Juilliard or something like that.
The first movie I remember very well, and the reason why was because I was probably in, like, first or second grade. I kept, like, bugging my mom to go see to go to the movies to see the movie. And then she brought one of my friends from school, mm-hmm, this little girl. Like, she asked her mom, like, oh, you know, is it okay if Diana, like, comes to the movies with us? We were going to go see a movie. My mom had no idea that Leprechaun was a horror movie. She thought it was, like, a kid's fantasy movie just by the title. So she brought both of us to the movies to see it. And this little girl was so terrified. Like, she was, like, almost crying. And my mom was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. And then she took the little girl home, and her mom got so mad at my mom. Like, didn't really want to talk to her for months because she was so terrified. And my mom was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I thought it was a kid's fantasy film. I didn't know that it was horror. Like, the movie's called Leprechaun. I'm thinking like a cute little,
yeah,
like Lucky Charms type of thing. Like, oh, and I'll never forget that. And I remember,
I got it.
Yeah.
I got both.
And I remember, the little girl, but I think that if she has a phobia of leprechauns, it's definitely because of that movie. And it was definitely because we went to the movies to go see it. So that memory will forever burn in my memory. But I loved Leprechaun. I'm a huge fan of Chucky, and I love the comedy behind Chucky, and I love the puns, and I love all that stuff. So that's why I'm also a big fan of the Leprechaun movies. Definitely love the goofiness of it. Leprechaun 1, though, is so ridiculous because there's no context. The movie starts in California. Why? Yeah, you just go with it.
Why not?
The movie starts with an old man who discovers the leprechaun's gold. The leprechaun is coming after him. Who is that old man? How did they meet? No context. Leprechaun just shows up. The old man dies, but before he dies, he puts the leprechaun in a crate and puts a four-leaf clover on it. Yeah. I always thought that leprechauns and four-leaf clovers go hand in hand. In that movie, it's like kryptonite, mm-hmm, for the leprechaun. And he's like trapped in that crate for like decades until years later, some guy removes the four-leaf clover and he comes out and rains horror or terror upon everyone, just trying to get his gold back. And I love the fact that apparently he was a shoesmith. Is that what they call what they're called?
Yeah. No, not a shoesmith. Cobbler.
He was a cobbler, yes.
I'm surprised that I fucking remember that. A cobbler.
He's a cobbler and loves to shine shoes, so that's like a weakness. If you throw shoes at him, he just automatically has to shine them.
Yes. But I'm trying to see if I can find the line, a friend with weed is a friend indeed.
So that was a line from the part four?
Yeah, and he was talking to...
Or part five when he goes to the hood?
He was talking to Ice Cube? Ice T.
Yeah.
Is this Facebook? No fucking way. I'm never watching a goddamn video on Facebook.
Yeah. Curious aroma. Interesting blend.
Interesting bullshit. That's the bomb right there.
The bomb? Ah, the bomb. A friend with weed is a friend indeed.
I just remember being a kid being like, huh. It's a good note. It's a good note to have.
Could you imagine, like, the writers in the writing room, like, oh, thinking of that God. Line and then saying it to each other? They're like, yo, this is it.
So here it is. A friend with weed. We need something to go with this. Indeed we do. Indeed we do. A friend with weed is a friend indeed. Yes. Yes. Do we get this guy from Juilliard to say this line? It's going to be magic, man. People are going to be saying this for years. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what they did.
Should the leprechaun be canceled? Because he says the N-word in that movie.
He does, but he says it in a... How do you say?
Is it because he's learning the language?
Yes, that's what. It's like it's in a... it's like Jackie Chan saying the N-word in Rush Hour, you know what I mean? He says it because he hears other people say it. He hears other people saying it like a term of endearment, like a greeting. So he says it. Then, you know, he ends up, you know, doing what Jackie Chan does, kicking ass with, like, furniture and shit like that. So it was all a misunderstanding. The leprechaun... It was all a misunderstanding, too, because he tries to say it as a form of greeting. Was it? Yeah. And
because he says, what's up?
Yeah. So then it just, oops. So it just comes out. But it was, I'm going to shoot him some bail. I'm going to shoot him some bail for that. You know what I mean? Even though, I mean, this guy has killed numerous people because people were trying to steal his shit. So, and another thing, I got to shoot him bail for that, too. Don't mess with his shit, and you won't. Like, Leprechaun, if he was, he's perfect for America in 2024. Like, don't come on his yard because he'll kill you. Don't touch his gold because he'll kill you. It's like, nah, he is... If he was an American citizen, he would be a... Would I say that he'll be a Trump supporter? Maybe. He don't want people in his yard. He will be a gun-toting Trumper, diehard. I would guarantee that he'll be so conservative, he would definitely be that guy. That's my thoughts.
Out of all the movies, which kill do you remember the most? Do you remember any of them? Like, which one, like, stood out for you?
Not really. I don't remember the kills that much, but I do remember there was a fat dude in the first one who ate one of his goals.
Yeah.
And then in order for him to get it out, what he did was he took off one of his buckles on his shoe, and he had, like, a little blade on it, and he just started slicing this motherfucker's face up. He said, if I can't get it out of you, I'm just going to slice it out of you. And it was so funny because it's like, this is a little fucking guy on top of you just slicing away. And it's like, oh, you got to shoo him away, man. Like Chucky.
It's like how Chucky is able to strangle people, but his arms are, like, yeah, this short.
But,
yeah.
Dude, you know, the thing that's different between Chucky and Leprechaun is that Chucky is so fucking nimble. If you shoo him away, he is so quick to roll underneath, like, some type of furniture. I'm talking about for real, yo. Just, like, if you see how fast he rolls underneath the fucking furniture, you'll see that this motherfucker's going to be a problem.
Like, he could teach classes on tucking and rolling. Yeah,
like, I've seen him just, like, get, like, shooed off of people, and they just show a shot of him just, like... He rolls so instantly as soon as, like, he knows that, okay, I'm not going to be able to, like, get you one-on-one, like a straight fade. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to be nimble as fuck. And then I'm going to use this bike pump that shit right into your chest and hit you once.
So do you know how they shot that scene?
What? Which one?
The one where he hits the ground and rolls. Mm.
Tell me they shot that in reverse, man.
No. Oh. It was like forced perspective. So like the floor isn't really flat. It's at an angle. So they just threw the doll at the wall and then it just rolled downward down the
How did the it couch. Make the doll roll rather than it just like just falling?
So it's not like perfectly 90 degrees. Okay. It's just at an angle where it could like land and then roll like a ball.
Dude, it was so fucking fast, man.
the way he rolls is actually more funny than terrifying.
Yeah,
like it's terrifying, but it's actually funny because his hair goes all over the place as he's rolling, like a wig.
And the way that he curses at people, man.
There's definitely I want to say maybe it's the first movie when he goes into a toy store, but in Leprechaun. He uses a pogo stick to kill someone. He jumps on them. He's constantly jumping on them and just, like, killing them to death. Which is crazy because you could just move out of the way.
Whoa. And I don't remember any of his kills, but I do remember in the first movie he died from explosion. Like his body, like, blew apart and then it magically came back together.
I want to watch the whole franchise again. I just learned as we were setting up that Sci-Fi apparently every year plays the whole entire franchise back to back, which I think is really cool. More they should do this for like Friday the I'm pretty sure they already do it, but Friday the 13th show playing all the on movies, Friday the 13th. Halloween show all the Halloween movies, like 100%.
Yeah, rather than on Christmas, you know, they just show a Christmas movie on TNT. I'm not really sure if they still do that, but back in the day, that used to be like a joy for me, even though I just watch one and done. I just watch it once and I'm done for the whole day. But I know that they do it every Christmas day. But yeah, man, they should definitely do that more. I'm trying to think of other movies that they should do. Well, they don't have a lot of like holiday horror movies or shit. Not even like rom-coms that are horror movies related or anything like that, or like holiday related.
I'm reading here that basically the writer and director of the first movie was actually the person, you know, to create the character. Mm-hmm. He was inspired by the Lucky Charms commercial to create a leprechaun character, but his twist was he wanted to make the leprechaun an antagonist, a bad guy. And then he was influenced by the movie Critters because he thought, like, oh, the villains are small. Mm-hmm. I want to make my villain small. Yeah, I think for some reason, you know, everyone normally gets terrified of, like, Jason and Michael Myers, like, these characters that tower over you. Mm-hmm. But I think seeing something small run really fast also fucking
creeps the shit out of me. Oh, hell yeah. I haven't seen any of the Annabelle movies, but I hope that it takes the same premise. Does the Annabelle doll move around, or does she just stay there and then somebody big just...
I never
watched. Is it like a spiritual kind of thing? I don't understand the Annabelle story. I should watch it, but I really don't feel it. I don't really feel it. But I don't feel like she's over here just walking around doing the work. I think that she's over here, she's outsourcing the kills and stuff like that. Or are there even kills? Because... which movie did I see? I saw one movie that took place in that whole Annabelle universe. Saw a couple of them, not just one. But there was not a lot of kills. There was a lot of scares. And then they found out the source of the problem, and then they dealt with the problem. There was not a lot of kills. It's just a lot of jump scares that take place in the actual movie itself. I think that's a lot about the James Wan. I think all his movies are not like, there's not a lot of people dying. It's just a lot of jump scares. Yeah. Nobody dies. They find a problem. And then after that, they solve it. And it's not even a complete solve. It's a temporary fix. It's like a Band-Aid. That's all they do. They just put a Band-Aid on it. And then, you know, we're going to, you know, the next movie is probably going to be like 2 years, 3 years later. And then you find that there's a new family that moves into that into that house or that town kind of thing. But, I mean, it is what it is. They don't like killing people a lot in James Wan movies. They like to, we'll scare you, you know, to make you think that you're going to die, but you're not. You ain't going to die. You'll be all right. You're going to be all right.
What do we got next on the docket? We said we were going to talk about...
Oh, we're going to talk about Boondock Saints.
Oh, the Boondock Saints.
Another Irish favorite movie of ours. I really enjoyed the first one. I think the second one came like years later. Was it like dropped like years later?
Let me see. I'm going to be real with you. I actually never saw this movie.
You never saw it?
I never saw Boondock Saints. No.
Dude. I saw it. I didn't see it in theaters. I'm just going to be perfectly honest with you guys. I've never seen it in theaters, but I did see it. And it was like late 90s. It was around the same time, you know, people were just like either bootlegging and like if you go to a barbershop, you see like bootlegs and stuff like that. And one of the movies that were bootlegged a lot was Boondock Saints. And I have to admit, like, that was on everybody's tongue. That movie, either you saw it or you were about to see it because somebody suggested that you see it. It was one of those movies.
I remember during this time, I used to... So the sequel came out a decade after the first movie.
Yeah, dude. One of those guys had, like, plastic surgery, and he ruined he ruined his face, man. It's not the dude from Walking Dead. It's the other guy.
I remember I used to shop a lot at Hot Topic during this time, and I remember Boondock Saints was everywhere. Like, I think half of the store had T-shirts with the characters on it. The most famous is the poster of them holding the guns downward.
Yeah.
Like, that T-shirt was everywhere, but I just never fucking saw it. Now I gotta watch this movie.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really good. It had one of those, I want to say it was like a Guy Ritchie-esque editing to it, where Guy Ritchie does this thing where he would prime you up for an action scene, right? He'll prime you up for an action scene, and then what happens is that as soon as it's about to take place, boom, you'll cut to, like, a scene of somebody inside of a living room reading a newspaper, and as they're reading the newspaper, they get a door knock. They walk over to the door, then boom, somebody bursts in, and you see that they have, like, a gunshot wound, and they're being dragged in into the house, being like, yo, we need to perform a tourniquet or something on this guy, still that. And as it's going on, it's like, what the fuck happened? And then that's when you'll see the action. That's when you see the action story. You see the action that we just missed take place. Because you see he'll show you the conclusion of it right before you actually see what actually took place. And Guy Ritchie does that a lot, and they do this in the movie a lot. But the person who initiates the actual action scene was Willem Dafoe in the first one. Because, you know, he had his – no, it wasn't Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe's in the first one, yeah.
Yes, it was him. Yeah, it was him. He, you know, did he put on headphones? They haven't seen it in so long. I think he puts on headphones. He plays, like, classical music, and then he basically, he draws out what took place in the whole, crime scene, which now I realize that is bullshit. That's total bullshit. There's nobody who actually does it like that. They, you know, they get, like, video and stuff like that, but... At the time, it was so real and it was so awesome. Now, you know, you see that kind of stuff in movies like all the fucking time. But at the time in the late 90s, man, it's a good movie. It's a great movie. And on top of that, they were actually like saying like Catholic speeches before they kill their main target. And they put like coins on their eyes so, you know, when they had to pay the toll, the toll man to get through and shit like that. It was an amazing movie.
It's definitely one of those cult classics because it's one of those movies that it did better once it came out on DVD than it was in the movie theater. In the box office, the budget of the movie was $6 million. They only did $30,000 in the box office. But I remember once this movie came out on DVD,
DVD sales
went out the roof.
Every DVD sales, DVD like rentals, everybody was talking about this movie. Nobody saw it in theaters because, like, to be honest, I don't even think they really advertised for this movie. There's a couple of movies that were out that I don't think anybody really the execs never really advertised for. Equilibrium, Boondock Saints, and I'm gonna say shit. I'm trying to think of another movie that was never really advertised. You know what? Fifth Element. I don't think they never advertised for Fifth Element. That movie didn't do well because there was no advertisement for it. Because I don't think they knew how to advertise for these movies. But once it hit DVD, and then, you know, that word of mouth, like, yo, somebody, some one person watched it, said that this movie is really good, another person, and it just, bro, like wildfire. Those movies just fucking took off. It's amazing.
What's another, oh, we were going to talk about Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders. To admit, I'm still like two episodes from watching the whole thing. You finished it?
Oh yeah, man.
You finished it? I'm two episodes.
The ending. Oh my god.
Is it good?
Yeah, dude.
Go ahead, man. Yeah. How good is it? Because you know I'm gonna watch it eventually.
So if you're two episodes away, you're at the point where he finds out that he's really sick.
Yeah.
And that he's dying.
Yeah.
So you find out at the very end that none of that is true. That doctor that diagnosed him was hired by one of his enemies. He told the doctor to tell him that he was dying, even though it was fake, because he knew, oh, he's probably going to take his own life, or he's probably going to stop his business, or, you know, basically just lead to his downfall. So Tommy Shelby finds out at the end, proves to the doctor that he was hired, and then kills the doctor, and then takes off on his horse. And, like, it just kind of leaves it, like, open, like, maybe it could continue if it wanted to. Like, it's just one of those badass endings. Like, he just goes away on his horse after he kills the doctor.
Holy shit.
But, yeah, he finds out that he's actually perfectly fine. He's not dying at all. He's not sick. That doctor, there's just... and it's funny because the doctor tells him he's sick, but he never, like, shows him, like, the proof. They never bothered to show the actual, like, the results, the medical documentation, nothing. It's just, oh, yeah, by the way, you have this this sickness, just like that.
Dude, but he looked sick.
I think it was just his mind. It's like, it's one of those things. If I were to tell you right now that you had, like, this bacteria eating your insides, you would start acting like weird.
Also, that's what that scratch is. That's what that itch is.
Yeah.
It's the bacteria. Damn.
A lot of the times, man, it's mental, man.
It's that placebo.
Placebo.
Yeah, it's a placebo effect. Damn. Oh, that's pretty damn good. Spoiler alert. You know what? Alert spoilers. Damn, that is pretty fucking good.
That show's been out for a long time, but yeah, I think anything. I think that's probably the most Irish thing I've ever seen.
what about a Scorsese movie, The Departed?
Oh, The Departed.
The Departed.
That's definitely American Irish.
American,
yes.
Irish. You know what's crazy? Like, American Irish is so different from its source that when I think of American Irish, I think of New York, Boston cops, yeah. Racism. And just a negative look. But when I think of Irish people from Ireland, I think of, like, they are so anti-fascist. They did some like, domestic bombings over there, but it was, like, it's for freedom. Shit, fucking, what's that movie that had Mel Gibson in it? No, that was Scottish.
No, Scottish. You're that was Scottish.
Braveheart. I was about to say, isn't Braveheart? Nah, but, you know, it's like it's two different viewpoints. Maybe because I haven't really looked into it, but yeah, those are my thoughts on American Irish versus Irish people from Ireland. And welcoming too. They're so welcoming over there. It seems like you saw what they did with what's the name from. The Beef, the TV show, the black girl, what's her name? Io?
Why, what'd they do?
Where she went over there for like 3 months, and then she said that, yeah, you know, I'm from Ireland and stuff like that. And then the whole country was like, yeah, she's welcome. She was born and raised. We can't wait to see her back. And then when she won at a Golden Globe, said that she's the first Irish woman to ever win a Golden Globe and stuff like that. And it was pretty funny. It was like an inside joke. And then later on, we find out that Cillian Murphy was the first Irish person to ever win an Oscar, which was pretty fucking dope. And even she says something on her Twitter saying congratulations from a fellow Irish person to win. it's all cute. It's all cute. It's like they're in on a joke.
Before we get into the Oscar stuff, you sent me the link to the new trailer for the Crow movie. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we could talk about that. Yeah, we could definitely talk about that. What's your thoughts on it?
So I did agree with you. Your comment to me was that you wish that the city was darker. And I do agree with that because As soon as you say the words The Crow, you think darkness, you think the color black, you think of like gothic, you know, like Gotham City type of like, you know, something that just feels muddy and grimy and dark. And the trailer definitely didn't give that vibe at all. It was definitely very squeaky clean. Everything looked, it looked almost more like Italian mafia or like new age Japanese Chinese triad or whatever.
Yeah.
But I still want to see it because I know the actor himself is a good actor. I thought he was going to be a little bit like whiny and emotional because for some reason, all these new takes on old characters have gone in that direction, but he doesn't seem like that. The action sequences looked pretty good.
That's what gets me about the new movie, right? I don't know if it's going to... You said that it's going to be a continuation.
No, I think this is an actual, like, remake.
Remake. Because I heard him say her name, Shelley, because the only reason I remember the name of the original woman is because Brandon Lee had a weird way of saying Shelley, and it was like, Shelley. And he said it a lot in the movie. And that's the only reason I remember her name.
And this is a remake of the original.
Of the original movie. I did see some, like, in the trailer, there were certain shots that I was like, oh, this is going to be fucking dope. You know, the shot where he's in like, black water and you see him, like, drowning and stuff like that. That looks dope. It looks like the killing of him and Shelley, that's going to be a pretty good one. You see the story, like people who haven't seen the Crow don't understand what's going on. But if you have seen it, I mean, you can basically tell what the premise is. I really don't like the fact that the city kind of reminds me of what Christopher Nolan did to Gotham. And how Gotham wasn't as dark as it's supposed to be. It was just Chicago. Yeah. It was just Chicago, and I really wanted it to be dark. You know, I wanted it to be like Tim Burton Gotham. Yes, like yo, this place is fucking like it looks unlivable.
Like they've never felt a summer before.
Yeah, they never felt. It's always rainy. You know, even in the first Crow movie, they were in the beginning of the movie. They were saying like it is constantly raining. Yeah. It was constantly raining in that fucking movie, and I didn't even notice it. I was like. Yeah, they're always wearing fucking coats.
It's always wet.
Everything is dark. Everybody's wearing dark colors. There's no light colors in that whole fucking movie. I think the girl had like a teddy bear. Yeah. No, a bunny that was pink or something like
and
that.
And every scene is at night.
Yeah, so it's all fucking dark. But this right here, you know, we're seeing shit take place in the daytime. And I was looking at a video because I wanted to explain my feeling about the wanting the city to be dark, and I saw a video on TikTok, and a woman said that the city in movies is a character too that people don't pay attention to, and I was like, "Oh, you're fucking right." Yeah. And a lot of people don't pay attention to the actual city itself being a big character in a movie to any movie. Like the way that Christopher Nolan did Gotham City and he just made it into a regular city, it's understandable just because he wanted to bring it real as home as possible. So, you know, he picked Chicago, I think it was also shot in Vancouver and stuff like that. So he picked like actual cities and he just wanted to make it like true to us. But we all know Gotham City is a fucking grim place that you don't even want to be walking down the street 7:30 at night. You don't want to be nowhere around there because there's a chance that you may not even get home. And the fact that, you know, he played it light was kind of looked down upon. But, you know, the movie was so good that it just washed it away. It was just so fucking good. And I'm saddened that they didn't do that in this movie right here. They should have really made it, like, just as dark as the first Crow was. The city was... I mean, like, the last scene in the Crow was a church, but it felt like they were fighting in hell, yo.
Yeah.
Like, you see the fucking gargoyles. There was thunder. The dude got impaled at the end of the movie. The villain got impaled because he fell from the top of the church with the whole, like, it was like, what do they call that? Gothic, that whole gothic look.
Yeah.
And it was just, It was an amazing feel.
I think, yeah, going back to what you were saying about, like, Batman and stuff, Batman the Animated Series, they colored the animation not on white paper. They drew it on black paper to automatically make the show feel dark. They used black paper instead of white paper. They could have done the same thing with the cinematography, which is, like, don't use a regular lens. Don't shoot it with normal lighting. Just change the white balance so that everything just naturally looks dark. The shadows just become the darkest areas of the shots and all that. Kind of like in the movie Dark City. Give it that feel.
Yes. Give it that feel. We want to be, like, you know, we're watching movies, so we're going to be transported into the actual scene, especially if you're watching it in theaters. And to make it dark. And, like, the Batman movie that came out, the one Gotham was fucking dark.
Yeah.
Like, we felt it. You fucking felt it. You saw it.
You
were there.
You feel almost dirty.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God. Yeah, I forgot her name. I got to remember her name from TikTok. She was talking about and how, like, that city looked like a place that you just would not want to be in. I mean, and it was Halloween of all fucking times. Yeah. Like, there was people wearing masks. You would think that a city like that wouldn't even celebrate Halloween. Yeah. Like, they would, like, nah, we're canceling this shit. Fuck the kids. No, fuck the masks. No, you stay home. Curfew at 5 o'clock. As soon as you get home from work, get your ass home. But they don't, because they're just trying to live through this. And it's like, oh my God, it's a beautiful place. And I wish they would have done that with the Crow. Maybe we're going to see something.
Now, the action, I do have to say the action sequences look pretty dope, though.
Yeah.
The part where you see the sword going through him and then he shoots himself to shoot the guy.
Yeah.
That was pretty clever. It
does look good, but it does look too bright.
Looks too bright.
That hallway looks bright as fuck. Bro, oh my God. Now I'm transporting back to the first Crow movie. You remember when they had like the plastic wrap on the windows?
Yeah.
Because it seemed like everybody was just fucking broke and they couldn't afford new windows. You know, why buy new windows when they're just going to break? You could just have a fucking plastic wrap. If it rips through, just put another plastic, just staple another one right on top. And that's what they had for their window coverings, just because it was raining all the time. It was amazing.
And because rock music has pretty much died, I'm very interested to see what the soundtrack is going to be.
It's gonna be classic rock. They're gonna revamp some of this classic rock. Maybe like a Taylor Swift song. They're gonna turn into a gothic one. Stay away from Juliet.
Because in the trailer, they basically remix like an old Aussie song.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can definitely see them doing that with that movie. Oh, man. I mean, but I'm always a fan of a genre bending, like, remix to something. You're not a fan of a genre bending remix to something?
Like, basically remaking an old movie but just changing up the genre.
Yeah, there's that group that we follow from on YouTube. It's called AWOL. They constantly do that. Like, they did the Say My Name.
Oh, by
Two Way. That's what they call. I was like, what is AWOL? AWOL is something else. AWOL Nation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they constantly, like, they were like it's cinema pop
music. Yeah, where it's like they make, they get like Destiny's Child and they make the song like epic.
Yeah,
and
they make symphonic. It fucking epic, yeah. And,
no, I'm actually a huge fan of that. I love when they do that. I know for Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, they did that with Gangster's Paradise in the trailer. Which actually sounded really great.
They didn't play that shit once in the fucking movie.
And they should have.
They didn't play that shit. It probably would have made it from a 2 out of 5 star, no, a 1.5 star movie to a maybe a 2.5. I mean, we'll go to the judges. I think the only person on this podcast that enjoys that movie is Josh, Dr. X, and he doesn't even know why he likes it. He doesn't even know why he likes it. I think he just likes it just to be a contrarian, to be honest with you. We got to ask him. We got to ask him some more. Next time when he's in the pod, you're going to ask him your real thoughts on City of a Thousand Suns.
Thousand Planets.
Whatever. It's a thousand something, bro. Whatever it is 999 too many, if you're asking me. If you're asking me. Dude, oh my God. You know, I was listening to last week's podcast, and when we were talking about Total Recall and the fact that they did not leave the fucking planet Earth, the one that was, and I was, as I was editing, I'm like, that's the dumbest shit in the fucking world, dog.
Dude, that's the whole story. The biggest plot point is Mars.
And I'm like, they didn't fucking leave Earth? Why would they not leave Earth? Because there was a tunnel from Australia to some fucking... I'm like, bro, oh my God. Because they wanted to keep it real to the book.
No, but that's the thing. When we were doing the episode, I read like the actual story of the book. The book is Mars. They changed it. It wasn't loyal to the book. The original one that we saw with Arnold Schwarzenegger, that version was, is the loyal version. That's why it's so fucking good.
Do you think that they made it on Earth because of... What's that movie that had Chris Evans with the train?
Snowplow?
Snowpiercer. Do you think that they were trying to like capitalize off of the love of that movie? Because that movie, even though that movie is loved, it didn't get that much love in the box office.
I think it was just people going like, oh, you know, let's try to ground this movie in reality. Are we really going to be on Mars? We're not going to colonize Mars. Let's just keep it on Earth.
I'm sick of it. I'm sick of people trying to ground shit. Yeah. Stop fucking, let these motherfuckers fly, yo. Let them fly, dude. Stop trying to ground shit. Fucking Yosemite Sam, dog, with a goddamn shotgun. Let these motherfuckers fly, dog. And it's, I hate the whole grounding of stuff. Like, yo, let's make it real. Let's make it true to Earth. I got another question. It has nothing to do with what we're just talking about. This is just drunk thoughts right here. Because I'm a little jazzed up right now. Do you think that, oh my God, what's his name? The dude who came out with Batman versus Superman. Zack Snyder's Batman would have been better received if it would have came out before Christopher Nolan's Batman?
No.
With timing. Do you think that if Christopher Nolan's Batman would have came out like the time that Snyder's Batman came out? And, you know, vice versa. Do you think it would have been better received? Now, mind you, Christopher Nolan's Batman would have came out the same time that, you know, now Marvel's already got their run going. They already got that. And what'd you call it? Zack Snyder would have came out.
Actually, no, because the MCU started with Iron Man. Iron Man came out 2008.
Yeah.
It came out the same time as The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
So Batman Begins was the only one that had come out yet. Like if Zack Snyder would have done what you're saying,
yeah,
they would have came out before MCU.
True. Okay. So you don't think that he would have been
Yeah. Actually, no. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think it would have been better received. Yeah. Because up to that, so the reason why Batman Begins and that whole trilogy took off so well, up to that point, all we had was the George Clooney Batman, like the goofy stuff. So yeah,
we never would have seen that and thought, oh shit.
But would it have been the same actors? Because remember, Henry Cavill at that time was really young and scrawny; he wasn't as big. Man of Steel would have had to already come out. Ben Affleck was a lot younger. Would he still have been Batman, or would they have picked another Batman? Because I did like Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne. I thought he was a good Bruce Wayne.
To be honest, like there was so much cool and. Like, cool and, like, thoughtful. Like, you could tell that Zack Snyder has read the comic book stuff that was in the movie that I was like, damn, this, I like it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that it's the greatest comic book movie, but him doing all that stuff where he had to go save Superman's mother, Martha, that was fucking dope. I mean, that scene plays in I think that everybody's head, like, at least once a year, people are like, man, that scene is fucking dope. And Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne is one of the best Bruce Waynes I've seen. Like, he played the playboy, philanthropist guy.
That Jameson whiskey's kicking in.
He played that guy. He played the guy well, man. He played the philanthropist. He pissed on himself, man. You know what I mean? It was so good. And even as Batman, he was pretty good. I guess a lot of people just found, like, the negative in him killing.
Yeah.
Him killing. But
nah, I don't think it was that. The negative was really just the writing behind that movie was all over the place. Like, it was saturated. Until this day, people could still have they still have a hard time explaining the plot of that movie. It's just all over the place. It, like, the movie's called Batman versus Superman, but the real Batman versus Superman is only 5 minutes long, and it's at the very end of the movie, the first 2.5 hours. It's, oh, now they're at a committee inside the White House, and they're dealing with the Senate, and then this and that.
Yeah, but, it had the whole Lex Luthor was introducing a lot, man. They were introducing a lot of stuff into this Batman, Superman. And I think it was you who told me, said, yo, the fact that we find out about the Justice League through a fucking thumbnail,
yeah,
through an email that was like, yo, this is you. And you just saw all the Justice League, and I was like, oh, fuck. I remember when you said that, I was like, oh, my heart.
And he already had the logos for them. That's another thing. He created their logos. Let's not forget that. Their superhero logos were created by a villain. That's how super they are.
He already had Wonder Woman, Cyborg, Flash,
Aquaman,
all of them. They already know who you guys are. Damn.
So, is it safe to say Lex Luthor created the Justice League?
Yeah, he did. I mean, if not, he's supposed to be getting some type of royalties, something. Like, he needs some type of compensation for creating them. Like, at least giving them their names.
Like, Bruce Wayne was just searching the world for these metahumans, and Luthor just had it on a thumb drive the whole time. Like, dude, I already did all the work. Here, I'm giving it to you. I'm serving it to you on a silver platter. Here you go.
But, world's, you know, I'm a play devil's advocate here. I'm going to play Jameson Coke here. If you were in if you were in Lex Luthor's place, right? You're on top of the fucking world, right? You're like one of the top three richest people in the world. You've got it. You've got money out the wazoo. You can have people disappear and nobody bat a fucking eyelash. You know what I mean? And then you find out that there's some fucking superheroes going around. Would you not want to be like, yo, I got to nip this shit in the fucking bud so I can still be on top because these guys can take me out if I do anything wrong.
100%. Dude, there was a Justice League. Wasn't there a Justice League movie or episode where Batman keeps a contingency plan for all of the heroes just in case they go bad?
Yeah.
Like, and he's a billionaire too, so of course he thought of that already. And then when everything backfires, they confront him and they're like, but what about you? And then he's like, you are my contingency plan. All of you guys can kill me like that. Like that. That's the point.
Just like that.
No, 100%. Lex Luthor, the fact that he didn't think of a way to, like,
to nip that shit in the fucking bud. Yeah,
for sure.
It's like,
is he really that big of a genius? You know?
But, you know, you can just see. That's what I do like about villains nowadays. You can see why they did what they do. Or maybe that's just me just becoming, older. I can see why they did what they do. Because back in the day, when action movies, you just see a villain, and this guy, you know, he's just, I don't know, he's just, he's just a dictator in a country, in a small country. And he's like, nah, I just want more country. You know what I'm saying? So let me just take over this other island. And then we have Arnold Schwarzenegger just coming over and be like, yeah, I'm a kill this dictator because he's over here just doing dictator shit kind of stuff. Those villains I can't really sympathize with. But these that have, like, some type of, like, well, you know, I need to do this in order to save what I already have kind of thing. Yeah, you can kind of agree with those kind of guys or those kind of girls kind of shit. Oh, but you know, I want to talk about The Gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
You haven't seen it. I am a fan of Guy Ritchie. I don't think I've ever said that on a podcast, but I've said that in like just passing and shit like that. Like, I passed people walking down the hallway and, but yeah, you know what? You know, I'm a fan of Guy Ritchie and just kept on walking. And I have to admit, there has to be like a study done on how his portrayal of like women is like bar none. Every woman that's ever been in a Guy Ritchie movie has been the representation of a strong, independent woman who's like, yo, if she's there, you know that she could hold her fucking own. And if you're there to help her, it's like you want to do it because you want to. It has nothing to do with her kind of shit. Because in that TV show, dog. The woman who's like the second in command, or maybe I think she's like the head, who's trying to walk through the guy who just found out that his family owns like a weed farm kind of thing. Yo, she has all the fucking answers. She's basically running everything, and while he's just trying to catch up kind of stuff. And then I look back at all the Guy Ritchie movies, and it seems like what's that movie? The Real Rock and Roller. I forgot her name. There was a woman who was in that movie, and she seemed like she just ran things. Like, she's the one who knows how to get, like, the actual art and then turn that into money and flip it into, like, drugs and stuff like that. I'm like, damn. I'm like, yeah, she knew her shit. The first fucking Guy Ritchie movie, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, there was a woman who was, like, always drugged out. She was on the couch, and then out of fucking nowhere, when everybody was fighting inside the living room, she pulls out the fucking Gatling gun, and she just starts spraying and praying. And I was like, God damn, this dude knows how to, maybe he knows how to make a guy's girl kind of thing. But I don't know if he passes the Bechdel test, because there's certain things that things that he just doesn't do in his movies with women. But out of like strong and independent, I think he nails that shit like perfectly. It's I forgot her name. She also ends up being
Sandy Newton.
Yeah, she also ends up, you know, getting it in the end, because you know, she's a double crosser. But other than that, man, she was and all of them are fucking awesome. I have lore about Guy Ritchie movies, and that was the new one that I just added. The other lore is that nobody in Guy Ritchie movies can dance. Nobody. You can look at his movies, and every single person who dances in his movies, they cannot dance. And I think that is just something that Guy Ritchie just does in his movies. He like, yo, I want you to dance on screen, but don't.
Very poorly.
Yeah, very poorly. Like, there's a scene where you have her and what's that guy's name? Gerard Butler. Gerard Butler. Where him and her, they're dancing, but they're dancing in like, like, if you was to see people dance like that, you'd be like, oh, wait. You look around for cameras, be like, is this Love on the Spectrum going on right now? Because something's up. Because it's a pretty, like, goofy, funny dance. And on top of that, if you've ever seen Man from U.N.C.L.E. and, Henry Cavill, when he's dancing with the woman in there, it's pretty like playful, but it's like, oh, it's all kind of like off as well. It's two great movies that when they have dancing, there's dancing scenes in it, they're off. And on top of that, they're like totally opposite of what the movie is. But, you know, it kind of works. It's just my thoughts. Jameson, drunk thoughts.
Yeah, I definitely got to check out The Gentleman. I was a big fan of the movie. We watched it during quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
One of those nights. Really good.
But there's no Matthew McConaughey in it. I don't know if it takes place before Matthew McConaughey or after Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. But it's a really good show. It's like 8 episodes. I'm on episode 4. Chef's kiss.
Okay. And then off to the Oscars. The Oscars was last weekend, right after we did the podcast. And what were your thoughts, Pat?
I am not sad, mad, or bad about anything, anybody who won. Whoever won, I was like, all right, that's good. I was pleasantly pleased with everything. Even with the Boy and the Heron, I was happy that they won Best Animated animated Feature.
A lot of people got bugged out by that.
Yeah, because they thought that fucking Spider-Man should have won. But Spider-Man won 2 years ago for Into the Spider-Verse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he won that one, and it was basically like the same thing. Here's the thing about Spider-Man fans, right? The video game Spider-Man came out like 3 years, 4 years ago. They won best video game of the year, right? They put out the same shit last year, thinking that they were gonna win video game of the year. But it was like it's the same thing. You're just adding more, a little bit more saturation to it. That's all you're doing. It's nothing. Maybe you're adding like new mechanics or something like that. But it's really nothing that you're not innovating anything. Baldur's Gate came out. They're basically innovating how everybody sees like top-down strategy games. So I totally get why Baldur's Gate won Game of the Year. Now, the Boy and the Heron came out. This movie was good. And Studio Ghibli has never won an Oscar. It makes sense for them to win an Oscar with this good movie, with this good animation. They've never won one. Even though that this movie, I don't think, is one of their top three Studio Ghibli's movies. But I don't know. I thought that it was better than Into the Spider-Verse, just based on just like sentimental reasons. Even though I've seen Into the Spider-Verse three times and I've only seen that movie once, I still prefer that over this. It's just like the emotional toll to it. It was way more heavy. And on top of that, it's what Josh said. Into the Spider-Verse, bro, you end it off with a fucking cliffhanger. It's not a complete, like, story.
Yeah.
That movie was complete. So it made perfect sense. I think that was the only controversy that that I saw. I know some people were saying that Best Female Performance, that's where another one was because Emma Stone won. I still haven't seen Colors of the Flower Moon. I really feel like I need to get emotionally ready for that movie in order to watch it, but I will watch it eventually, and maybe, you know, my reasoning will my pick for Best Female Performance will change. But as of right now, I saw Poor Things twice, and I thought it was a good movie. And Martine told me that, yo, Poor Things is basically Barbie. Poor Things is basically what Barbie was trying to do. And I was like, really? And yeah, women empowerment and, you know, all that jazz. You know?
All that stuff.
All that, you know, all that, you know, all that stuff. You know what I mean? I'm a man of few words, but, you know, the words, I fill it up.
The intent is there. The intent.
My heart. Celine Dion. Delon.
No, I thought the show was good. The only thing that kind of bugged me, I don't know, with Jimmy Kimmel, sometimes he hits and then sometimes he misses when it comes to hosting. It was just weird, like, the show started off, he started with his jokes, and then he throws in that one Robert Downey
I never heard it, but people saying that shit was in poor taste, was it?
And it was like, yeah, man, because he's bringing up Robert Downey Jr.'s like drug history, like when he was a teenager, and it's like, dog, this guy's been coming out, but nothing but wins since Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you bringing that up now? Like, and then you could see Robert Downey Jr. was not happy. Like, he was just like, he went like this. Like, he made a gesture like, yo, keep going. Like, move on to the next one. But, and then Jimmy Kimmel just stayed on it. And it was like, dude, move on, bro. Like, because even Jimmy Kimmel was like, what's that gesture? Is that like a cocaine gesture or something like that? And it was like, dude, move on. Why would you?
There was a cutaway to Emma Stone, and he said that he's a prick to the person who was next to her. Dude, I didn't even know that Emma Stone had a kid.
I had no idea.
Dude, when I watched Poor Things, I was like, I was like, bro, when the fuck did she get that small? Bro, she is like a little dainty little girl, man. I didn't know that shit, bro. For some reason, I keep on thinking of her from, was it Superbad? Is that the movie? And she was thick then, but she was like really small. I didn't see the actual awards. I just saw like clips and stuff like that and the winners. You know, I just wanted to see the meat and potatoes. I didn't want to like sit there for 3 hours, but I heard that it was pretty good. Yeah. Like they said that the award was pretty good. Maybe they don't need a host next time.
I think they just need to go back to just really having fun. It was so funny. Someone on TikTok uploaded like, yo, this is what the Oscars used to be back in the 80s. And I didn't even fucking know this because I think I was just I was a little kid at the time. I didn't even know what the Oscars were. Mm. But they showed 1 year Pee Wee Herman came out to present an award. And then they brought out the giant robot from RoboCop, the bad one. And it came out, and it's like, roar, roar, roar. And then it starts shooting at Pee-wee Herman while he's on stage. And he goes, like, flying off in the air. And someone wrote, like, bro, this was once the Oscars. Look how fun this shit is.
That's MTV Awards, man.
Yeah, that's, like, on the level of MTV Awards. But I think maybe it's a good thing, man. Maybe we need to go back to, like, that, like, hey, stop taking yourself so seriously. Fucking have fun.
Yeah, I'm a fan of silly, especially if you're, because you got to think about the Oscars as a work function, right? Like a you know how they have like end of the year, Christmas party kind of thing, but you know you're just giving out like rather than giving out like what's those things called like best employee to use the bathroom in less than 5 minutes kind of shit. Well, best, you're getting fucking awards that, you know, that actually mean something. So it makes perfect sense for them to, like, you know, have some fun. But it seemed like the only fun thing that they had was there was that one thing that had Ryan Gosling with, what's her name, giving out an award who... she was in Oppenheimer, and they were, you know, they had, like, a little friendly banter between movies and shit like that. But I would really like to see, like, bits, like, actual bits kind of shit. And I guess they did have a bit where John Cena came out naked, but do better than that, yo. Because there were some people who were saying, like, they didn't like that shit at all. I didn't see it. I didn't watch it. I'm like, he came out naked? I'm like, not fully naked. And then when I saw the fucking, the actual, like, picture, I was like... this motherfucker is fucking naked. He's naked. That was fucking intense. But I mean, it is what it is. I would like to see like actual bits. I know that in the '80s when they had Eddie Murphy host one of the Oscars, he grabbed the camera crew and then he went into the bathroom. He said, yeah, you know, we don't really have anything to do. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go into the bathroom. And he went into the women's bathroom. And he said, what's going on in here with the mic on? And I'm like, oh, my God. You see, like, there was somebody who was walking out like, oh, my God. I think that's kind of funny. That, you know, like, little, like, oh, my God, I can't believe he's doing this kind of shit. That stuff is fucking hilarious. But I don't know. I mean, last time they tried to cut loose and Will Smith ended up smacking a bitch. So what are we going to do?
Or at least, I mean, I think it could be directed towards the actual love of filmmaking. I think they focus a little too much on the glamour of it, and that's fine. But, like it would be cool if they actually brought out a film crew onto the stage and, like, reenacted a scene. And then you could see why the lighting is so important. And they actually, like, do that all that live. Like, we're going to reenact this famous scene from Goodfellas or whatever. And they just
transform bring out the Jabba walkies and stuff.
Yeah, like, it would just...
why not?
And then just, like, really show, like, no, this is the reason why we have the Oscars. Yeah. Like, this is the love of filmmaking. Movie magic. That's what it needs to focus on. Movie magic. A little bit more movie magic, less glamour, I think.
I would really like that. Wasn't there a time that... what's that dude? What's his name? Cuba Gooding Jr.? Mm-hmm. Did he host the Oscar? Cuba Gooding Jr. Did he host the Oscars once? I think he did. No, he won an Oscar. There was an award show that Cuba Gooding Jr. hosted, right? And it was a whole bunch of people dancing on the stage, and they were breakdancing and shit like that. And then you see, like, this one dude who was, like, one of the lead breakdancers, but he had on a mask. And then you find that that was fucking Cuba Gooding Jr., bro.
Oh, yeah, he used to breakdance, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck is that, bro? Yeah. I was like, I don't know what show I was watching. Maybe it was, like, the Great Breakdancers of the World Award. I don't know what it was, but, like, I was like, holy shit. And then, you know, you start to remember that. And what's that movie with Show Me the Money?
Rat Race. Oh. No. The reason why I said Rat Race, he breakdances in Rat Race at the end.
Oh, does he?
When Smash Mouth performs on stage, he starts spinning, and then he does, like, the worm thing on the floor. That's why I immediately thought Rat Race. I was thinking of Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire, because he ended up breakdancing in that movie, too. I was like, what the fuck? He does end up breakdancing in, Jerry Maguire after he got that big hit. And then, you know, he made the touchdown. Even though that celebration was way too fucking long, by the way. Yeah. But, you know, I guess we're just going to let that shit fly because it's a fucking movie kind of thing. But, yeah. By the way, that might be the greatest rom-com. I think because it won an Oscar, did it not? Yeah. Yesterday, I was talking to my friend Gloves. Shout out Gloves. And we were talking about there's three people in this world. There's people who love rom-coms and not afraid to say it. There's people who love rom-coms and they don't say nothing about it. And then there's people who love rom-coms and just love talking shit about them. That's it. Either ways, you love fucking rom-coms. That's it. Think about it.
After the Oscars, they had interviewed Christopher Nolan, and they had asked him about, like, other genres that he'd be interested in, and he mentioned horror. So now there's rumors that he made his next movie.
He's going to do a time horror movie where you get killed by time or some bullshit. That's what it's going to be. I said, no, don't do it. Time is going to kill us all. Oh, yeah. You talking about somebody just growing old? Huh? Chris? Is that what it is? I see it. We all see it. We all know what the story's about. Some type of time jumper or something like that. Who are you going to get? You gonna get Denzel Washington to play his son in the early years or something like that? Like this, that is me. That is me. Kind of stuff. I get it. But to be honest, I would like to see like people jump out of their comfort zone and do like different type of genres. I would like to see maybe Martin Scorsese do, you know, like maybe like an urban gangsta movie. You know what I mean? Like maybe something that's like it has something to do with like Detroit in 2008 or something like that. I would like to see that. What can you see something that like a director doing? I got it.
No, you got it.
All right.
I think what you just said can apply literally to any director. It could, man.
I'm trying to think of something. Maybe see like Tarantino do a musical. I could see him doing a musical. I could definitely see that.
He even said he doesn't like musicals.
He doesn't.
So that would be a challenge.
You see? That would be a fucking challenge for him. Maybe, I'm trying to think, Wes Anderson doing like a space movie, like a space horror movie.
I would like to see Michael Bay do a rom-com. No explosions, no action.
Fuck, man. Dude. And that motherfucker likes to move, man. I've heard stories about being on set with him, and it's like it's a fucking task. Like you know how like certain directors like to hold the camera and shit like that, and he will have the camera like, but he have like a small kit with just the camera here and doing all this. But you'd be tethered to him with like you know you have his power pack, and he'd be like, "Yo, I want you to stay close to me." No, he'd be like, "Yo, don't stay that close to me." Because I'm going to move around and stuff like that. But you have to stay close to him because you have the power and stuff. So if you stay here and then you get close to him and then he comes this way, he'll yell at you. Yeah, dude, it's fucking ridiculous. People have told me stories like, yeah, he yells at people, and on top of that, like, you as an AC, you set up the cart with all the batteries, all the lenses, and everything. You set it up here, thinking that the shot's right here, bro. He'll walk you like 2-3 blocks down, and he'll be like, no, just leave this. We're gonna go, and then he'll ask for a battery. You already use all your fucking batteries, and he like, where's the fucking battery? I'm asking for a battery. Where the fuck is one? Knowing that, bro, it's like three fucking blocks away. I gotta go grab it. So you gotta be one of these active fucking like ACs. It just seems like he's one of those, I guess, like an old school directors who just yells at people kind of thing. But here's the thing about those old school directors that yells at people, like what's that guy's name, man? Who did The Shining?
Stanley Kubrick,
right? I've never heard of him yelling at his crew. I've only heard of him yelling at actors. Never heard of him yelling at his crew.
Oh, no, yeah.
He yelled at his crew, too?
Yeah. So that same documentary where you see him yelling at the actors?
Yeah.
He yells at the crew, too.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I never heard of him doing that.
In the beginning, they have this giant machine that's, like, producing the snow, and he's yelling at them. And, bro, at one point, I think he's upset that the machine is too loud. And they're just like, what the fuck do you want us to do about that? Like, if we turn off the machine, you got no snow, buddy. Like, no, what do you want?
That's what you were yelling at before. Now, like, since we got this shit going, now you're...
Dude. And then, like, he gets mad because I guess he's yelling action, but the actress doesn't hear it because the machine is so loud. So he's yelling at both the actress and the crew, but they're just, like, looking at him like, what the fuck do you want us to do? Like, what is your solution? Yeah.
Dog. Oh my god, man. And there's this person who I follow on TikTok, by the way, that might be getting fucking banned.
Yeah.
It is what it is. The way that I see it is that it'll be fun to see a social media platform that doesn't have any Americans on.
I think it's going to be a vicious cycle. Instagram Reels is already copying TikTok.
Yeah.
I think if it ends up actually being banned, Instagram Reels is going to start becoming popular, and then all these American companies are going to go, we'll just make our own TikTok. Make it American-based. That's it. That's all it is. It's just the fact that they're from another country.
But it's only going to have Americans on there.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like everyone's freaking out because, oh, well, China, you know, has access to all of our stuff. Yeah, so does Instagram.
Yeah.
Instagram and Facebook, they were guilty of selling all of our information. Like, it's already happened, and no one's complaining about that, only because they're American.
I guess it's the crime within the home is better than the crime done to the home, I guess. I don't know. It's something like that, but to be honest, man, it's like, it's both foul, but the fact that you're already doing, you're still doing the same shit, it's like, nah, man, it's... I don't know. I like TikTok, and now I'm finding myself having to see that everybody who I follow on TikTok, I have to follow on Instagram. But I realized that fucking all the algorithms are the same, man. Like, my algorithm is the same no matter what platform I go to. Because the same videos that I saw on TikTok, I'm going to see them either a week or 2 weeks later on my Instagram feed. No matter what, bro. And I see the same fucking people. And it's crazy because then when I go on YouTube, and if I go on they got like the reels kind of thing, the shorts, I'm like, yo, I see the same fucking, it's the same fucking videos. So I realized that I'm gonna find a video eventually. It's gonna hit my eyes eventually. So there's nothing that I can really do about it. So it just sucks that, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, they were making money, like, off of TikTok, you know, kind of thing. They were making, I think one person who I follow was saying that they were making, like, $4,000 or $5,000 off of TikTok a month. And that well's going to run dry. So I just got to get some work from other places. But this person lives in, like, California, and they work in the industry kind of thing. So, and it was like TikTok was their side hustle. And now they're just going to have to, you know, just you know, just pivot to either YouTube or Instagram kind of thing, which is fine. I mean, as long as they know what they're going to do, I wish them luck, and I'll follow you over there. Like, I'm willing to follow people, you know, if your content is good and if your content is constant. But, you know, does it suck? Yeah. How's our TikTok doing? Is it going good? Is it going bad? It's going all right. I mean, if you guys follow us on TikTok,
I do think we need to make more content though.
On TikTok?
Yeah.
Well, next week I think we should do that. We'll do like those TikTok trend things where download a video that's off of. You know what? We're going to end this podcast because we're going to be talking shop. And let me play us out with a little bit of music here. A little bit of Irish. A little Irish jig to wet your whistle. Potty gold. Shish gonna bobby.
I love how you win Australia.
You know what's crazy about that? Bro, with
Dumb and Dumber?
When I found out about Henry Cavill possibly being Wolverine, right? I was like, how the fuck is he going to talk to people? I'm like, are they going to change Wolverine to like a British guy? Say, hey, bub, you better back up or you'll be on a bobby.
The sword thing. But Wolverine was only Australian, like at the first iteration. Then they changed him to Canadian. So that whole bub thing is Canadian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never heard a Canadian say bub before.
Wolverine was Australian once, and then they quickly changed him. Because Hugh Jackman never spoke with an Australian never accent. Did. And in the old X-Men movies, Hugh Jackman is supposed to be Canadian.
Dude, and on top of that motherfucker's tall, dude. They're never going to go to a short Wolverine at all. Y'all, you know who they wanted? They wanted to do an X-Men movie in the 80s, and guess who they wanted to play Wolverine? The guy from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the cop. Because they said that he was 5'6", and he's always playing angry characters, so they wanted him to play Wolverine. And I'll tell you this, that fits. That fucking fits. You don't think so?
That hair would have looked so fake on that ball guy.
Yeah, man, but it fits, man. Yeah, put him up. I mean, he can play the fucking the Celtics logo.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah, so that's been our episode, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everybody enjoyed this special St. Patrick's Day version of We Saints It podcast. I've been Pat.
This is Kev.
This has been us, and y'all been y'all. Hope everybody had a ball. Tutu, ta-ta. Ta-ta, see you later. Ta-ta, Batman. Till we meet again.